Hey, Fanboy Nation.
This is your pal, Daffy Duck, and you're watching.
You're watching.
We're watching. You're watching Fanboy.
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 A fanboy, etc.
Fanboy Nation.
Dad, I assume Tom.
This man has set and broken every bodybuilding record possible. He is a legend in the industry. I don't know why it took so long to get him a documentary. Nutritionist, philanthropist, legend, Rich Gaspari, how are you today?
Doing great. Great to be on the show.
Listen, man, I am thrilled that I get to talk to you. The minute I saw that Mike O'Hearn said you were worth talking to, I was like, all right, I got to talk to Rich because, like Mike said, you don't always want to meet your heroes, but if you get a chance to and the guy's worth talking to, then it's even better.
All right. I hope I stand up to your hero image.
Listen, so long as you're not a jerk to me, I'm happy. So that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Cool. You know, you and I are both first generation Americans. And I love when your dad said you either go into a trade or become an engineer, because my dad was an engineer. So
yeah.
It's funny, like, how engineering is like one of the top three industries for all immigrants.
Yeah. For some, you know, like my dad, you know, he only went to about third grade of school in Italy. And, you know, he became a mason. So, you know, he was a blue collar worker, but his dream was to be an engineer. And my oldest brother, he became an engineer. But when I went to college, I was more into, like, you know, the human body anatomy. So I started doing pre-med and I didn't have the interest in engineering. There's a lot of math involved in engineering and, you know, physics and engineering. And I was just like, oh, this is not me. I don't want to be an engineer. And I definitely didn't want to be a mason. My dad was a bricklayer mason. I'd see him come home and work, you know, really hard, you know, tired, full of like cement. And the thing that it did teach me, you know, in life is that, you know, if you want anything in life, you have to work hard. And that was one thing my father really put in my head. He goes, you know, we came to this country to give you a better life. And when I came, you know, being an American, a lot of people take it for granted. You know, I think you and I, because we're first generation, you hear it from our parents, the reason why they left their country. And, you know, I took that to heart. I really, anything I did here in, you know, whether it be, you know, whatever I wanted to do, that it was important that I put everything into it. So when I decided to be a bodybuilder, I wanted to make sure that I did everything I could to be the best bodybuilder and leave no stones unturned to be that, you know, great bodybuilder.
I love how you say there was too much math and engineering while you own one of the largest supplement companies in the world, making money hand over fist.
That's different. You see, that's mathematics to know margins. You know, that's subtraction and add. That's very easy math. But when you're sitting here doing physics, that's not my thing. I hire people for that.
You know, when you tell your dad, you're like, hey, I'm going in this bodybuilding thing. And, you know, you mentioned Bruno Sammartino in our pre-interview, who was just a bear of a man in the WWWF and was the longest running world champion. I think he still holds the record. And he was also an Italian immigrant like your family from the same region. And then, you know, Lou Ferrigno, who I believe is also first generation or second generation, and him becoming like one of the kings of bodybuilding. Which I don't ever think Lou really got his just desserts the way, like, you know, Schwarzenegger and Frank Zane are always the two mentioned, but like Lou and Columbu and all those guys were right up there too.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they were, because they were Italian, you know, I definitely really, you know, loved Lou Ferrigno. You know, as a child, he became the Incredible Hulk, you know, I was really proud to know, you know, he was an Italian American. Franco, but the thing about Lou Ferrigno, he was 6'5" and I'm 5'8". So I didn't really identify with someone that tall. Franco Colombo, you know, is a bit shorter than me, but I identified more with Franco Colombo because first, you know, he came right from Italy. Secondly, he was super strong. And when I trained in the gym, I loved lifting heavy weights, you know, so I identified more with Franco Colombo, you know, as the champion and being Italian.
You know, you mentioned in the documentary, and it's no secret, you had to retire because of a herniated disc in your neck. Yet
yes.
You still look like you can compete. Like, how do you change your workout habits to go from like Mr. Intensity and being nicknamed the Dragon Slayer to now like, I got to tone it down a little bit because, you know, we know how old you are, but like, you look better than some dudes in their 20s.
Well, I, you know, when I did get injured, it set me back, and it actually went into a state of depression, because when I got injured, I no longer could be that bodybuilder, to make money on my body. And I was like in actually, you know, rehabbing in bed. And I said, what am I going to do now? My interest, you know, in being a bodybuilder was nutrition was really a big part of my success, because I was the first bodybuilder to get, you know, striated glutes and the most ripped bodybuilder at my era and my time, more than anyone previously to me. And plus, like I said, I was a pre-med student, so I did a lot of studying. So I said, you know what? I always looked at the supplement companies as something I wanted to do. And I decided just to go into like selling supplements, because I really believed in supplements, that they did help supplement your diet to be better. But when I got injured, you know, I just used a lot less weights. I still train in as intensely as I can. I can't do a lot with my right side, because when I ruptured the disc in my neck, it kind of basically put pressure on the nerve on my right side. So I had atrophy in my, you know, my right side a little bit. But as I got older, it got worse. Just recently, I had a disc replacement, which is very, very cutting edge and new. So I had that disc put into my neck. So I'm trying to still train hard. I love training hard. You know, when I became a bodybuilder, it wasn't about, there's certain bodybuilders that had great genetics. You know, one of them, like a Flex Wheeler, he was a genetic freak that he didn't really enjoy training, but because he had such great genetics, he became a great bodybuilder. I was the opposite. I was known to not have the best genetics, but because I love training, I love studying nutrition. Like I said before, I left no stone unturned in being a great bodybuilder. You know, I love to make sure I had the greatest presentation in posing. So the aspect, you know, I call it the compound effect. When you do every aspect of what you have to do to be great, training, diet, presentation, you know, positive outlook, you know, I ended up not doing bad for a guy that said, you know, from Jersey, that said I didn't have great genetics to be able to come second 3 times in a row in the Olympia at one time, won more Grand Prix shows in the late 80s than any bodybuilder, and get set, and then also winning the Arnold Classic. So a lot of that was just my positive outlook and my perseverance to try to be the best I could be, even when people were saying that I couldn't.
Well, let's hold you right there. You know, you didn't just win the Arnold Classic. You are the first ever winner of the Arnold Classic, and no one could ever take that away.
Yeah, I mean, when I became the first Arnold Classic, you know, I competed in many shows that Arnold ran. Before the Arnold Classic was the Professional Mr. World. I did win that show. And in the Mr. Olympia, Arnold ran the Mr. Olympia a couple years, you know, when Zane was at Mr. Olympia. And when I competed, he had in Columbus, Ohio, where I got my second place. So when Arnold invited me to go into the to the Arnold Classic, I said yes. You know, after going through a grueling Grand Prix tour, getting second in the Olympia, going into 7 Grand Prix, that show was in March. I got done competing in 8 shows and went into the Arnold Classic. I, you know, Arnold invited me, so I said, I'm going to go. And, you know, I am, like you said, a very honored to be the first winner, you know, of the Arnold Classic.
Yeah. And on top of all of that, with everything that comes with it, you know, you rupture the disc in your neck, but you're still able to train at least to stay healthy. And there's one thing you mentioned earlier that I really want to touch upon. You said supplements are there to supplement your nutrition. And I think yes, too many of us get lost in the diet pill, the fat burner, and all this stuff, and then not realize that I can't take the supplement that, you know, is supposedly having the minerals that and vitamins that broccoli does, and then go eat 3 Snickers bars afterwards. Like, it doesn't balance out that way.
No, listen, I'm in the supplement business, and I always tell people that, you know, first and foremost is your diet and nutrition. If you're eating properly, you're going to make it. That's the most anabolic thing you can do. No drug could replace eating. And if you look at any great bodybuilder anywhere up to the present, eating is a big part of their success. It's 75% of the success. So, but when you are a bodybuilder or an athlete that's putting through intense, grueling training, it's hard to eat all the foods in the food chain, especially if you're on a strict diet or a low carbohydrate diet. So then you can supplement to get a lot of the vitamins that may be missing on your diet. getting in protein powders when it's more convenient. It's actually better to eat, say, chicken or fish or eggs, but inconvenience, it's good to eat protein powder or have used protein powder. You know, I got into the supplement business because I did feel there was advantage using supplements like creatine, glutamine, all those products that I felt gave me an advantage to be a better bodybuilder. But as I said earlier, you cannot replace food. Food is the number one thing to do when you want to be a great athlete.
By the way, before we get any further into the supplement industry and you coming out of your depression once you were able to start working out again, your buddy, Mr. Gonzalez, who used to work for Redline, I have a bone to pick with him.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because when Redline had the 2-ounce shots back yes. in the day, you know, I sat there and in order to open it, you got to peel the entire label off. And I didn't know that little 2-ouncer was 2 servings. I laid in bed for 14 hours going, I want to sleep. I can't sleep. I don't know what the hell is wrong.
I don't know if that was that was Alex Gonzalez's fault or more. Jack Owak, who made the product and put 2 servings in a bottle, you know, to make it look bigger. So you're supposed to drink half. Nobody would drink half, I would guess.
Right. So I just want to blame Alex for that because he was on video saying that he worked for.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you have to retire at some point. You put on bodybuilding shows. You have Gaspari Nutrition. And the documentary is, you know, pitched to you. Like, and I've seen interviews with you before. I know you've worked with Generation Iron before. You know, is there a part where there's a difference between conducting interviews and talking about life and then having an entire 2-hour documentary made about not only your career, but lifting the veil and going into who Rich is at home? Because who you are on stage is not necessarily the same guy.
Definitely. I mean, I have to thank Frank Zerillo too, who had first approached me, I don't know how many years, I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago, when he approached me and asked me if he could do a documentary on me. And I was like, what do you want to do a documentary on me? What, you know? But, you know, he said, you know, it's very intriguing to see you go from one of the, you know, the greatest bodybuilders and then become an entrepreneur with your company and still stay relevant. You know, the thing is if you look about my competition, you just mentioned a show. I won the first Arnold Classic. That was 1989. I competed into like, 1997 was my last show. So it's many years ago, you know, it's like 26, what is that?
27 years. Yeah.
26 years ago is the last time I stepped on stage. And with my company, I still stayed relevant in the industry. And now because I'm older and more, you know, everyone calls me, you know, a legend and, you know, iconic in the sport. But, you know, I owe a lot to being a business entrepreneur that the Gaspari Nutrition kept me relevant. There's a lot of guys were great bodybuilders during the 80s and 90s. That you don't even, you know, hear about or know, you know, they exist anymore. You know, I was able to keep myself relevant through social media, which, you know, now is a big way to be, you know, present in the industry. I have close to 1 million followers on Instagram. So what kept me going is transitioning. A lot of athletes have a problem. They put all their efforts into being a great athlete, you know, whether it's a basketball, football, baseball. And then what happens when their career is over? Such as having, you know, a devastating injury. They don't know what to do with themselves. You know, I was able to pivot from being that, you know, bodybuilder and saying, well, to be a great bodybuilder, you know, I mentioned, you know, I left no stone unturned. I had to have a positive outlook. I had to stay very organized in my training. I had to be disciplined. So if you think about all the things that it takes, the attributes to be a great athlete, and you put that into business, you'll be great. But a lot of people are unable to make that transition from athlete to businessman or entrepreneur.
I think Mark Kerr would be the greatest example of that, you know, being known as the smashing machine in mixed martial arts. And then last I heard he was living in Arizona working for a car dealership, yet no one has picked him up as a wrestling coach. And he was one of the greatest wrestlers and MMA fighters in the history of the sport.
There you go. I mean, some people just do not know how to, you know, just transfer that knowledge and say, okay, let me use it here instead. And, you know, I know my, you know, bodybuilding days were over once I got injured And I said, I have to do something. Like you said earlier, you know, I was in a state of depression. I was competing. You got to remember, I was in the mid 80s into the late 90s. And when I got into the 90s, the whole sport changed as well. You went to the Dorian era where bodybuilders were much bigger. So I was trying to keep up with those guys. And actually my last show that I was going to compete in before I got my injury, I went from a normal, 210, 215 to 220 was my biggest weight to trying to compete at 240. That injury devastated me. I went from 240 down to 185. Losing everything because I couldn't train. I couldn't do anything until my neck healed. So I sat there in bed and I said, I can't use my body anymore to make money. What am I going to do? And then I started looking at, what my real love was. And that was, supplementation, nutrition. And I just started studying it more. And, I learned, business through, what's it called? The School of Hard Knocks. Everything I learned was through just experiences in the business. And, the one thing, like I said earlier, is you have to work hard in anything you wanted. And what I did is because I had so much travel as being a bodybuilder, I used that and traveled throughout the world with my brand. And now the brand is in over 50 countries. We still sell everywhere in the world, besides the United States. So that's how I kept myself, busy. Once I focused on saying, okay, I'm not going to do this bodybuilding anymore, but I'm going to be able to build this business like I'm building my body. That's how you can make that, transition where you mentioned the MMA guy, things like a lot of these athletes just don't know how to do that transition. They stay in that state of depression. They live in the past and you have to figure out how to pivot.
All right. I do want to ask you this one question I've never asked a bodybuilder before. All right. So you see those videos where the guy walks around the gyms or it's at Olympia or Fit Expo or one of the fitness thing, and he's going either to the female athletes or the male athletes and he goes, natty or not. And I'm looking at some of the athletes. I was like, that one had a nose job. That one had Botox. That one had a butt lift. That one had a boob job. I can't call you natty if I already know you had a lot of plastic surgery. Like, shouldn't there be categories between the natty and not if we count plastic surgery?
I mean, I've always said that I guess you can count a lot of the things that the women actually do where they have butt implants, boob implants, they do stuff on their face. I don't know if it's much that guys are doing it, but when you're considering whether you're natty or not, I respect both, type of athletes, and what they do. I'm not going to say I never took steroids. When I competed as a pro bodybuilder, I took them, to be the best, but I did them just to have the finishing touch. I always said that steroids were the icing on the cake. They were not the reason I became a great bodybuilder. They were able to help me recover, faster and easier. They were able to let me diet to get to that really low body fat without losing muscle. But I still had to do the work. I still had to do the training. I still had to do the dieting and the discipline and the posing and all this stuff to be a champion. When someone sits there and they say, oh, well, look at this guy. He got that weight. I could do that just by taking steroids. There would be many, many, many more champions if that was the case, in what, I did. And I'm not ashamed of saying that I used anabolics. I mean, if you ask me now what other bodybuilders today use, I have no idea because what we used back then was a lot less and a lot more basic than what's going on today in the sport.
Right. And I do want to mention the Mass Monsters because you did bring up Dorian and then the trajectory from there to where we are, even with Big Ramy.
Yeah.
You have the guys that are your height or a little bit shorter that are now walking around at 320. What does that do to somebody's heart? Because whether you're 5'8 and 320 obese or 5'8 and 320 a mass monster, your heart's still pumping an insane amount of blood just to keep you going. Doesn't that become dangerous at some point?
Very much it is dangerous. And I a lot of these guys, they are young. And I guess if they can gain that weight, now that this sport has gotten where bodybuilders are much, much bigger, I think it has become a little more dangerous to gain that kind of weight, and then, you're seeing guys that are in their mid, to late 40s trying to compete and actually having heart attacks and dying because they're trying to put so much mass on. And you're actually right by saying that it doesn't matter whether you're fat or whether you have, you know, you're fat at 300 pounds or muscle at 300 pounds. Your heart has to work to feed all that weight. And, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that, you know, 2 years ago, I actually went to a cardiologist because I was seeing a lot of bodybuilders die. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go to a cardiologist to see, you know, with a checkup, a thorough checkup to see if I'm okay. Well, I went for a thorough checkup. And one of the things I did was called a C score. They look at the calcium in your arteries. And I had a very high C score. So then I had to do another test to actually, you know, go in through my wrist, a catheter and go all the way into my heart. And they found one of my arteries were 70% blocked, which then I had to put a stent in. And, you know, I'm still super healthy. I didn't have a heart attack, which was great. But because of, you know, what I did to my body plus genetics, it taught me, you know, that you have to really, you know, when I was young, I would do anything. Now that I'm, you know, I'm actually just turned 60. It's a lot harder that, you know, to try to talk to somebody young and say, you know what, you're going to get to be older unless you're going to die early. And if you want to live long, you got to take care of your body besides. So you're right. Gaining that kind of weight. If you do gain that kind of weight, I just think that you're going to have a shorter life expectancy in the sport and you should get out by your 30s if you're going to be that big, because I just think if you start getting into your 40s and you're that heavy, your heart has to work so much harder and it can cause, you know, effects of, you know, bad effects, you know, heart attacks or dying.
You know, thank God you're okay and everything went well and that you didn't have a heart attack and that you're able to maintain, you know, not only your health, but your physique. You know, the documentary comes out, by the way, before we forget to mention, on November 3rd. When you see the final cut, because it's a 2-hour documentary that flies by, it feels like 45 minutes, you know, but this is more than what a 2-year process, because we're going all the way back through COVID and seeing how these bodybuilding competitions were halted and, you know, the gyms were closed, which made no sense. They're like, hey, like I used to be 370 pounds and I had lost 98 pounds during COVID because they're like, hey, fat ass, you're going to die if you catch this thing. And like I eliminated all the stress and everything else in my life. And when you eliminate stress, weight comes off, but you're just like, dude, how do you like sit there and go, hey, you need to be healthy. No gyms. Hey, you need to be healthy. All the food places are closed except big box stores. And now you can only munch on, you know, crackers and cereal. Like how can you be told to be healthy while this is going on and then try to be healthy when there's nothing available to be healthy?
I think the whole COVID time is like something, you know, as you know, is going to be historic, you know, that we lived through this whole pandemic. And you're right. You know, I was fortunate. There was a gym up the street. He closed down. The poor guy closed down and now is out of business. But while during the pandemic, he gave me the key to the gym, and you got to listen to this, that I had to go at 4 a.m. when it was pitch dark by myself in the dark training. Now, which was really ridiculous. I was by myself in the gym training, that if I was caught in the gym, that I was actually breaking the law, training in the gym by myself, you know? So I thought that was the most ridiculous, you know, things that they were doing in the laws, that, like you said, they want you to stay healthy, yet you can't go to the gym, you know? To me, it was one of the most ridiculous times in our lives, that, you know, what's right was wrong and wrong was right during that time. And I was able to live through it. Like I said, I was able to go to the gym at 4 a.m. that the guy gave me a key to go in there by myself. And because I wasn't allowed to be training, I was training in the dark during that period, you know, to keep myself, you know, occupied and keep myself and keeping my physique.
Well, at least you knew to re-rack your weights and not trip over a 70-pound dumbbell.
I know, in the dark. I was using my flashlight on my phone to get around.
Listen, the same thing happened here. Like when we got shut down in California for COVID, some guy went surfing and the Coast Guard pulled him in saying it was too dangerous. I was like, believe me, the guy in the middle of the ocean on the surfboard is the safest guy right now in all of California.
I know, like that, that's like some of the things that they did was just bizarre, but I'm glad that it's over and I hope to God it never happens again.
You know, you were able to maintain not only your health and your physique and your company during this. You created 11 plus products in the middle of the pandemic. What were some of the products that you were able to create and help promote, allowing people to at least get supplemental health? There,
I had, I said, well, it's during the, you know, during COVID, I said, look, well, let me produce products that are going to help with health and immunity. So we had a product called Proven Immunity. I sold vitamin C. I sold many products more, for health, you know, during that time for increasing immunity, that I was able to stay in business. The thing is I, you know, before the pandemic, I was selling to the stores, but when all stores were closed, I had to say, what am I going to do? So we basically pivoted to do online sales. So a lot of what we did is, you know, I learned a lot about how to do online sales, you know, target marketing, and people were still trying to stay healthy. So we actually grew the business and came up with 11 new products during that time. We still came up with fat burners because at the time, like you said, you're being sedentary. So what were you going to do? Let's come up with some fat burners to give to people while they're being sedentary. Came up with a new pre-workout, Super Pump Aggression. It was during the pandemic, you know, because I was saying, well, people are still going to train. People are still going to use pre-workouts. Let me get them what they want. So yeah, I was able to like keep my business going during that hard time where a lot of people went out of business. We were able to sustain the business and actually grow during that horrible time.
And you also have Gaspari Kitchen, which is part of Gaspari Nutrition, where you have essentially a cookbook online that taught people how to make healthy meals like your shark kebabs using swordfish. I mean, so yes. You didn't like leave people high and dry, which I truly commend you for.
Well, I wanted to continue putting out information. As you know, people are sitting at home. So, you know, my website was my main tool to get out to the people. We talked about social media. I focused on increasing my social media, doing a lot of, you know, lives, you know, interacting with other people that we could do lives with. And that's how I just kept myself relevant during the sport, you know, during the time. You know, like I said, I've been in bodybuilding. It's shit. It's, believe it or not, like I've been training for 40 something years, you know, being a bodybuilder when I started as a teenager and continually still doing this, you know, it's part of my life. Like I'll be training till the day I die because it's like something that I really enjoy doing. Taking care of my body, staying lean. You're never going to see me with a pot belly, you know, because I want to make sure that I always stay healthy and look good.
Now, I do need to ask you this. Say the gyms close down again, right? But they give you 1 hour, three days a week, and you can only do total body workouts. What's one exercise you do per body part that like, all right, this is the ultimate total body workout?
Okay, that's a good question. I would stick to legs, squats are number one. Back, working back thickness. Can I do two different exercises for back or just one exercise, you're telling me?
Back is huge, so you can either do you know, one for upper, one for lower, I guess.
So we can do lower back deadlifts, upper back dumbbell rows, arms, barbell curls, shoulders, side laterals, triceps, French press, and calves, calf raises, and abdominals crunches. I think I got all the body parts.
You missed chest.
Oh, chest. Incline press.
Okay. I dig it. A lot of people forget about incline press. They always want to do flat bench.
I always believe that when you did a flat bench, it kind of made your chest more droopy, you know, because it developed more of the lower pecs. So if you wanted to really get your pecs developed, lifting, you know, training the upper pecs gave you more of that raised chest effect. So I always focus, whenever I train, I always focus on my upper chest more than my lower chest.
Makes perfect sense, man. Now, you know, with everything going on and the documentary coming out on November 3rd, you know, what's something that someone would be extremely surprised to learn about who Rich Gaspari is when it comes to the Gaspari documentary?
I mean, basically the documentary is about, you know, someone that never gives up. I'm a very, persistent guy that goes through many, many obstacles and, you know, things in life that have, you know, brought me down, but always come right back up to just keep fighting. I'm a fighter. I mean, I don't know if everyone knows, you know, I've always been a fighter in anything I did, you know, whether someone told me I couldn't do something, I made sure that, you know, I didn't listen. I always call it the white noise. I didn't listen to the guys that told me I couldn't do something. I was always there to prove that I could. So, you know, what you're going to get out of this documentary is more about, a positive outlook in life, whether you're, you know, I happen to be a bodybuilder, but it's more about being positive in life and never giving up in whatever you want to do in your dream. And that's what, you know, this documentary is more about.
I dig it. Rich, before I let you go, one final question that regarding to health and wellness, because, you know, we have calisthenic workouts, we have free weights, we have machines, and now the big thing that people are really getting into is resistance bands. What's one advantage that each one of these types of workouts has?
I mean, if you can't train in a gym or you don't have access to equipment, calisthenics are always something that you can do between doing push-ups and sit-ups and, you know, any type of exercise that you can use your body weight, you're still going to get something out of that. So if you're unable to get to a gym or you can't afford equipment, calisthenics are a last resort. I still believe 100%, you know, free weights are the best to use for any beginner to start training, you know, to know the basics and exercises. So a beginner that wants to train, you know, necessarily to gain more muscle, using those free weights are great. Also, if someone's starting out and they're very intimidated by free weights, using machines are a best alternative. And the thing is, what I used when I competed to today, the machines are unbelievable. There's some great machines out there that can train the entire body. But I still believe that you can still use those free weights, because when you're using, say, a bench press or a squat, you're using not only your legs, but other ancillary muscles to train. When you're using a straight leg press, you're just using, say, the frontal thigh and glutes in doing the movement. So we did free weights, we did machines, we did calisthenics. What else did you say?
The resistance bands, since those have become really big recently.
I mean, I think there's great benefits to using a combination of resistance bands with weights. I see a lot of women using resistance bands for training their glutes, because with a resistance band, you're constantly getting tension when you're doing, say, you know, glute exercises. Even if you're using them in combination with free weights, it's still better than not using anything. But I think for me, resistance bands are something like that's an addition that you can do for free weights or for machines. But if you have no choice, where it's calisthenics, secondly would be resistance bands, then you would go into either using machines or free weights.
Rich Gaspari, I really thank you for your time today. It's been a great pleasure chatting with you. Gaspari's documentary comes out on November 3rd from Generation Iron on all streaming platforms via VOD right now. Where can we find you on social media if we want to connect with you?
I'm on Facebook under Rich Gaspari, and I'm also on Instagram under Rich Gaspari, so you can find me on there.
Thank you so much, Rich. I really appreciate your time today.
No problem. Really enjoyed it.